Y'all ready? Y'all ready?
Yeah.
Let's go. Come on.
Tiger Rag Radio is on the air.
Let's crank this thing up.
We're statewide, breaking down the latest happenings with LSU athletics.
This is us.
Hear from the coaches.
Here in Tiger Stadium on Saturday night, there is nothing like it.
The players.
We're having fun and we're working, baby. That's it, baby.
The recruits.
Show some passion and some heart.
And those who cover the Fighting Tigers of LSU and the SEC.
LSU is the best job in football.
It's 2 hours of nonstop LSU talk.
What a privilege. I mean, you get to represent LSU.
Tiger Rag Radio is brought to you by Cummins. Cummins creates power solutions that the world depends on. Louisiana Beef Industry Council. Boudreaux's Electrical Services. Sunshine Quality Solutions. Super Chevy Dealers. And Louisiana Farm Bureau Federation. Get ready to talk Tigers with producer Andre Champagne and our hosts, Todd Horn, Jeff Palermo, and Glenn Gilbo.
These are players that are better people than they are players.
This is Tiger Rag Radio, live from Super Chevy Dealers Studio.
Back here from the Super Chevy Dealers Studio, Jeff Palermo, along with the executive editor for Tiger Rag Magazine, Todd Horn, the editor, Glenn Gilbo. Also, Andre Champagne for a hour number two of Tiger Rag Radio. Reed Darcy from The Advocate will join us a little bit later on, as we will eventually divert to LSU women's basketball, ranked number 6 in the latest AP poll after a couple of solid victories last week, or the last two Sundays anyways, over Texas and Oklahoma, and they'll be at Texas A&M on Thursday night. LSU now 3-2 in SEC play. But, of course, a lot of the show tonight devoted to football transfer portal, and a guy that knows Lane Kiffin is Grayson Ware, and he is a guest here now on Tiger Rag Radio. Grayson is now with BroBible.com. Grayson, thanks a lot for your time tonight.
Yeah, thank you guys for having me. Glad to be here.
Hey, Grayson, this is Glenn. Thanks for joining us. Jeff, Grayson and I used to work at Outkick.com together under Fox Sports. And back when the whole world was saying Lane Kiffin was going to take the Auburn job, including most of our, I think all of our staff at Outkick, Grayson was like, no, he's staying. and Grayson came out right all along. But Grayson, what just as a guy who went to Ole Miss and covered Ole Miss when Lane was there, what did you think of the job he was able to do at Ole Miss? I mean, he didn't walk into a great situation.
No, he didn't. And shout out to Matt Luke, first of all. I mean, he actually got Ole Miss. People don't give him enough credit for kind of bridging that gap between Hugh Freeze and then Lane Kiffin. You know, he kept the program relevant, and keeping AJ and DK in Oxford was a very big deal to help the program kind of continue to be a relevant brand name after the Sugar Bowl and all that stuff. And then Lane comes in, and I have kind of a weird background with Lane. Some of my first memories, my parents are both USC Trojans, and so my first memories of football and loving college football is that Lane Kiffin offense in 2001, 2004, 5, 6, et cetera. And then I've kind of watched him all the way through, had the experience of then watching him again at USC as a head coach, and then being firsthand having him in Oxford. So when he got to Oxford, like you said, it wasn't the best situation, but to be fair, again, to Matt Luke, it wasn't the worst. But with that being said, you know, he is a winner. So, you know, Lane Kiffin, you could say what you will about his personal life and all the craziness and the off-field stuff and the Twitter and all that stuff. Fine. I get it. I understand it. And as someone who is now on the other end of it, it's really not all that fun to be on the other side of his Twitter antics. But with that being said, I mean, he wins football games, right? He came in the first year in 2020 in COVID with a not great roster, kind of a weird situation with all the pandemic and first year head coach and all that stuff. Immediately wins 10 games, 2021, and then the last 3 years have been what they are. And I don't think this program, you know, would be where it is right now without Lane. And I think he knows that, and he wishes the people in Oxford would give him more credit for that. And they will with time, perhaps. But the one thing you're going to always get with Lane Kiffin is a winner, and he wins football games. He gets top talent in the system, and he knows how to build a staff around him that uses those players well.
talking to Grayson Ware on from ProBible.com, covers college football. You know, Grayson, one of the many stories that we have not gotten to about Lane since he became LSU's coach, because there's been so much craziness going on with the Ole Miss staff and so forth. But what do you remember, like, what happened to Lane as head coach at USC? He got off to a good start. He was doing okay. And then all of a sudden, you know, he's fired midseason. I know he had some bad games that year on the tarmac. Did he just kind of lose it? He wasn't as focused, or what do you remember about that?
I don't know if you can even say he did a bad job at USC or deserved to be fired. I really don't, because he got into that job and Pat Hayden was the athletic director at SC at the time. And when he took that job in 2010, if I'm not mistaken, so he was walking into a situation where the Reggie Bush stuff was all unfolding, which now looking back on it, right, Reggie Bush's parents accepted a little bit of money from an agent going to the NFL. And here we are in the NIL era. But all the Reggie Bush stuff was going down, and Pat Hayden kind of told him, hey, Lane, you know, we really want you here. We know this is your dream job. You left Tennessee in a blaze of infamy, et cetera. But when you get here, we promise that this whole Reggie Bush situation won't be a thing. It's not going to be a problem. You have nothing to worry about. Obviously, that was not the case. Lane got there, and they got hit right away with a two-year bowl ban, all kinds of recruiting sanctions, I believe like a 34, something historic, right? Like 34 player scholarship reduction or something insane like that. And he still managed to land the number four recruiting class in the country, I think 2011, maybe 2012, and won 10 games 2011. 2012 went 7-6 with a team that he lost 35 scholarships in an era where scholarships mattered. And then he turned around and there starts getting some smoke because he was kind of the first head coach after Pete Carroll. So everybody expected national championship or bust. Nobody kind of looked at it from that 30,000 foot view of, well, he inherited a really brutal situation here with these sanctions, arguably the death penalty, or modern day equivalent of the death penalty, if you will. And then just kind of, you know, 7-6 wasn't going to cut it at USC at the time. If you 7-6 today, you might be able to survive it. And then he turns around, starts off kind of slow. And what really got him, and I know Lane, you'll hear, I know you guys are new to Lane down in Baton Rouge. You'll hear this story a lot over the next however many months, especially when Lane ends up in Destin with Paul Feinbaum in June at the SEC meetings. It will come up again. Paul Feinbaum got on College Game Day, and this was back when Feinbaum was kind of becoming who he is now. He wasn't really as big of a brand name, a household name. And he said something to the effect of Lane Kiffin is the Miley Cyrus of college football. And while there was maybe some truth to what he said, it was an inflammatory statement that put Lane in a really negative light. So all of the kind of nation had already turned on Lane because of how he left Tennessee. Even though in Lane's mind it was, I would not have left Tennessee for any other job. USC was his dream job. Him and Layla were out there, et cetera. And then it just kind of all came crashing down at once. And then on top of that, you know, not to just say he didn't deserve to be fired, right? Which I actually, in retrospect, don't know if he was one of the worst decisions USC has made in a long time. Was letting him go because he was dealing with such a difficult situation.
Yeah, and it was mid-season. It was mid-season, exactly. Too, I mean.
But a brutal loss at Arizona State, and Arizona State was a joke at the time. But, you know, he's a difficult personality. Lane Kiffin is a difficult personality, and I've always said, you know, William Faulkner said, to understand the world, you must first understand a place like Mississippi or whatever like that. To understand Lane Kiffin, you have to stop trying to understand Lane Kiffin because he's just he is who he is. And he's a difficult personality and rubs some boosters the wrong way in Southern California because maybe he didn't want the money to go where it was going. He didn't want certain boosters to have as much have their hand in the cookie jar as much as they did. And then on top of that, he started losing in an era where USC wasn't used to losing. And then Paul Feinbaum's Miley Cyrus statement was kind of the icing on the cake. So it was kind of just a weird spiral at the end. And if you look at it now in the history of college football, where we look at the last decade, 12, 15 years, USC might have come out of that recruiting sanction era with Lane Kiffin as a head coach and won a national title. But we never got to see that because they caught him loose, on the flight home from Tempe.
That was a great history lesson there, Grayson. Appreciate it, man. Talking to Grayson Ware from BroBible.com. Well, let's switch gears a little bit, Grayson. What were your impressions of the Ole Miss offense that Lane built that really got good this past year, but was good before this under multiple quarterbacks? Just what strikes you about his offensive tactics?
So interesting. You keep saying his, right? And I think I would have done the same thing up until this recent playoff run at Ole Miss. I was someone who was of the opinion that it was Lane Kiffin's offense, which, as the head coach and an offensive-minded head coach, it is, right? However, over these last months, 2 months, I've gained a tremendous amount of respect for Charlie Weiss Jr. as a play caller and as an offensive mind.
Charlie Weiss did tell me, Grayson, at the for the Sugar Bowl, that he's been calling the plays at Ole Miss since he went back to Ole Miss in 2022. So, yeah, that's definitely a good point.
Right, and he was calling plays in Boca Raton at FAU too. And so when everyone says it's Lane Kiffin's offense, yes, that is true. But Charlie Weiss Jr., I've kind of flipped my switch over the last however many weeks here to where it is Charlie Weiss's offense with Lane Kiffin's influence. But if you kind of look at it holistically and look at Lane Kiffin going back to when he was a play caller, even all the way back in 2005, and then, you know, he was primary play caller, I believe, at Tennessee, USC, whatever. The thing you're going to get with a Lane Kiffin offense is that it's going to go. So tempo is his big thing. He's always going to want to outpace you. He's going to want to outsnap you. He's going to want to get the opponent's defensive line as tired as possible. He's going to want to prevent you from subbing on defense. And he's always going to take a shot. So as much as people love saying Lane and Charlie's offense is an air raid pro style system where they throw the ball a lot, if you actually look at the numbers, I haven't looked at them recently for the last however many years at Ole Miss, but up until 21, maybe 22, Ole Miss ran the ball 54, 55.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah. They ran it a lot this year, man. Yeah. That's the thing people need to realize.
There's a lot more run game in this offense than people realize.
Exactly.
And the run game sets up that air raid because nobody remembers the 3-yard game on first down. Nobody remembers the 2-yard gain on second down. They remember the deep shot that goes for 60 yards on third down and 4 or whatever it is when you take the shot, because 90% of the time, if you're on the opposing 40-yard line or closer, Lane's going to look at it like four down territory. So nobody remembers the early kind of down run plays. They look at it as this deep passing offense, when in reality, the run game sets up the pass, and that has worked to where the defense is forced to crash the box to stop a guy, most recently like T1 Lacy, and then they'll hit you over the top where they'll expose you where the cornerbacks aren't ready. So I think the biggest thing with Lane is you have to be prepared for a balanced system. You have to be prepared to go fast, and you have to be prepared to take a shot when it presents itself.
Grayson, thanks for giving your perspective on Lane Kiffin. It should be fun to see how it all works out at LSU. Appreciate your time.
Absolutely. I think he's going to do great things down there, but good luck with all the shenanigans on the internet.
Thanks, Grayson. Appreciate it.
That is Grayson Ware from BroBible.com. We'll take a break. More of Tiger Rag Radio from the Super Chevy Dealer Studio when we come back.
Chevy trucks have you covered when the road takes you from smooth sailing to Chevy Colorado will eat up some of the toughest terrains with 5 available drive modes. And Silverado and Silverado HD have the muscle to take you out for some serious with multiple engine options and impressive towing. While Silverado EV is the perfect combo of performance and capability,
nice,
making it a snap to hitch up this electric truck and hit the road. Wherever the road leads, Chevy trucks are right there with you. See your Super Chevy dealers today.
I'm Richard Fontenot, president of the Louisiana Farm Bureau Federation. My brother and I grow rice, soybeans, and raise crawfish on our farm in Evangeline Parish. For a fourth-generation farmer like myself, Louisiana Farm Bureau is as much a part of my life as checking traps or harvesting rice. Our organization is more than 145,000 members strong, and we've been around for more than 100 years. The Louisiana Farm Bureau spans generations, and we want you to join our family.
Visit lafarmbureau.org, the Louisiana Farm Bureau Federation, the voice of Louisiana agriculture.
Back to Tiger Rag Radio, live from Super Chevy Dealers Studio.
Back here on Tiger Rag Radio, Jeff Palermo along with Andre Champagne and executive editor for Tiger Rag Magazine, Todd Horn. We got, do we have some breaking news? I'm trying to get a sounder going here. It was. Sucked. What's the breaking news, Todd? Or has Luke got it?
Luke's got it.
Luke, what do you have for us?
LSU has signed their, Todd, do you want to call it the 39th or the 40th?
We call it the 39th because we don't count junior college transfers as part of the transfer portal.
Which
But other institutions and publications do call it the 40th. It's really the 39th.
Okay. All right. Past the semantics, everybody wants to know who they signed.
Yeah, it is not Jordan Seaton. It is Theo Grace. It is the brother of
Luke Grace.
Luke,
right?
Grace, yes, yeah. From Oregon, and he played at North Dakota last year.
That's right.
I was able to speak with his dad a little bit. He explained him as a psycho on the field.
Oh, really?
So,
and he's a linebacker.
Okay. He's a big boy, and I'm sure that Chris Kiffin and Blake Baker are going to be glad to work with a guy that has, you know, that kind of mindset on the field. So, number 39 there.
And what's going on with Seaton right now? Do we know anything updated from what we talked about?
Is he
about
at the governor's mansion? Yeah. Did he go to the Skyview thing at the state capitol? Did he?
Yeah, is he at Supper Club? It's an ongoing.
Trying to think of other Baton Rouge landmark places you'd want to go.
It's a never-ending
story. Is he at Topgolf? What's he doing?
Luke is basically telling us he doesn't know where Jordan Seaton is right now.
He's a hard man to locate.
Oh, the saga of this, though, huh? With Jordan Seaton? I mean, it seemed like it was. Seemed like they had a good shot at getting, and they might. They still may. But you said something earlier. You said that
I think it's
an 85% done deal.
I would even say probably more than that. I think it's just down to some language in the contract.
I would probably agree with that. Just, you know, if we're going to speculate here, I'm going to speculate because I love looking at Lane Kiffin's tweets and just trying to, like, see what cryptic things he's posting. Because
that can make your head hurt too.
He did post around 4 or 5 o'clock this afternoon that he was on the MMR plane somewhere, and people have found out that plane was heading to Washington, D.C. Jordan Seaton is from Washington, D.C. so they might have been going speak with maybe, you know, parents, or they might have just been going home to meet him. Who knows? It could be really any of those. But I would say they're definitely in a good position right now.
See, Jeff, that's what I'm talking about, all right? The dude goes to an impromptu, for him, press conference speaking engagement that he wasn't even prepared for because he was paying attention to recruiting, delivers a winning speech that wins over the crowd again, turns around and spends the afternoon on a jet flying to Washington, D.C., we think, to recruit, goes to Knoxville on a Friday afternoon to intercept a quarterback that, you know, is the number one quarterback in the portal. Of course, I'm talking about Sam Leavitt. Brian Kelly would need an appointment in order to do something like that. That's the difference in this program right now.
That's the difference, but would you say the harder part now is putting this all together?
Yeah, I think that's a very – and Kiffin talked about that today. It's like, okay, now we've got the talent on our roster, and we're going to finish it out, he said, over the next couple of days.
Yeah.
And it's probably going to be the most talented transfer portal intake in the history of college football. But now the hard part begins. We've got to put this together and mold it into a team. He didn't say he didn't lack confidence they could do that because he says we've done it before, time and time again. And it, you know, it's not like they just went around and cherry picked people or didn't cherry pick people. They got people that they felt would fit the, what they're trying to do. But it's still a task, and it begins now.
Yeah, no, and I think Todd has a great point to that because you look at it and it's like, all right, 40 new guys, but it's you know, most of these guys are really hungry. They're coming from, you know, smaller schools. They want to prove themselves. So I wouldn't anticipate that you're going to have too much trouble in terms of, you know, guys that are, you know, selfish or trying to really just focus on themselves, right? I think they're going to try and do whatever it takes for the team to win, right? And that's kind of what Indiana was able to do. So if they can find a way to do that, then they'll be set up well.
Well, and look at what Malachi said when we were talking to him, and we just asked him, I don't even know how we asked it, but it was, what are your expectations for the season? National championship.
Yeah.
National championship. You're not talking about, you know, finishing sixth in the SEC and hoping they make.
But last year's team didn't do that either. And I understand. I know what the big difference is. In your mind, Lane Kiffin is heads and shoulders better in this situation than Brian Kelly.
Schematically, intrapersonally, enthusiastically, energetically, it's night and day.
Yeah,
it really is.
And the staff. I mean, look what the staff that he's compiled.
All right. We are going to talk some women's basketball when we come back. We're not going to talk men's basketball. That's not going very well in Gainesville. Well, maybe we'll say something about it. But we'll talk a little Lady Tigers hoops. Reed Darcy from The Advocate, he will join us coming up here in the next few minutes. So stay tuned for that. You're listening to Tiger Rag Radio on the from the Super Chevy Dealer Studio. Much more coming up right after this. And don't forget, if you missed any part of the show, want to listen to previous shows, we are available anywhere you get your podcast. Also, the show gets uploaded to YouTube about 40 minutes or so after we're done here tonight. So Tiger Rag Radio, you're never too far away from it. We'll be back after this from the Super Chevy Dealer Studio.
I'm Richard Futno, president of the Louisiana Farm Bureau Federation. For more than 100 years, Louisiana Farm Bureau has been the voice of Louisiana agriculture. Louisiana Farm Bureau advocates on behalf of all the farmers and ranchers across our great state. What that really means is we advocate for you to ensure we have the safest, most abundant, and affordable food supply in the world. Louisiana Farm Bureau is 145,000 members strong, and we want you to join the Louisiana Farm Bureau family.
Visit lafarmbureau.org, the Louisiana Farm Bureau Federation, the voice of Louisiana agriculture.
And we're back with Tiger Rag Radio, live from Super Chevy Dealers Studio.
All right, I've been talking a lot of football here for the first 90 minutes of Tiger Rag Radio. And again, thanks for joining us here, whether you're listening to us as we do the show live or some of our stations carry us on a tape delay basis, or you might be hearing us on the podcast or maybe on YouTube. But we appreciate your time and devotion to the show and want to continue to keep talking about what's going on with LSU athletics. And for that, let's turn our attention to women's basketball. Reed Darcy from The Advocate joins us now. Reed, how you doing tonight?
I'm doing great, guys. How are you all?
I'm doing well. The team's doing much better, I think, since the last time we spoke. Was he on last week or was it the week before,
Todd?
No, it was
the week before. When they were mired in a losing streak.
Yeah, and we were wondering if Kim Mulkey should step down and all this kind of. Well, we didn't get into that.
But we were talking about the possibility of going 1-4 or 0-5, and they certainly reversed course there, Reed.
What's been the difference here, Reed?
So, first of all, I think it's been the defense and the rebounding. You know, if you look at the losses to Kentucky and Vanderbilt, LSU was really uncharacteristically, I think, poor in both of those areas. But if you look at these last two games against Texas and Oklahoma, two really good defensive games, two really good rebounding games. I look at the game against Texas, and LSU got 19 offensive rebounds in that game, and that's quite a lot, especially for a team like Texas that is just so big and strong and physical and good around the rim. And that continued over into Oklahoma. You know, they played really good against the two players that they really needed to defend well, and that's Reagan Beers and Aaliyah Chavez. Reagan Beers, the big post player inside, she was in foul trouble. She never really got into a rhythm, and LSU kept her off the glass. I believe she had one or two rebounds, I think in the third quarter, and that was really important for that game. And then Aaliyah Chavez, the freshman guard, she had a tough time finding a rhythm as well, and she didn't really get any easy looks, you know, outside of that first quarter where they really got rolling. So the defense and the rebounding have been much, much better than they were in the first two games, and I think that's the main reason, the number one reason why LSU's back on track.
So that may be how it manifested itself with the rebounding and the defense, but I have a theory, Reed. My theory is that Kim goes back and accuses them of being not tough, and they have to be tough because they're just not tough, and we can't do anything. And they become tough because they've been a much tougher team, like you said, manifesting itself on the rebounding and with the defense. But the other thing is that even though Kim never reads anything that's written about the team, she somehow read that you were talking about them in Texas and her, you know, having a hard time beating Texas, and then she sort of chastised you in a press conference, Reed.
Yeah, she did. She's done that before. It happens every now and then. It probably won't be the last time she's done it. But I think in that moment, I think, you know, coming off the big win over Texas, I think she was just feeling good about herself, feeling good about her team, and she wanted to boast a little bit. You know, I didn't take offense to it. I didn't feel bad about it at all, but it's just like, you know, I think kind of in that moment, you know, in the lead up to the game, some of the things we tried to contextualize as part of our jobs to say that, you know, LSU hadn't beaten South Carolina or Texas since Kim Mulkey's been here. They were 0-5 against South Carolina, 0-2 against Texas, and so now they finally got that big win. And, you know, I think that just, like, illustrates how big of a win that really was, because without it, LSU would probably be 2-3 by now, and going into another game against South Carolina, another game against Texas, trying to climb out of that hole and get back to the top of the SEC. Now we can talk about them as, like, a firm player at the top of the SEC, a threat to win the league and a threat to get a 2 seed in the tournament, or even a 1 seed if they can win maybe one or both of those two games coming up.
Well, and Reed, to your point, I mean, the arguably the win against Texas was the biggest win in regular season under Kim Mulkey. I mean, arguably, I'm thinking out loud, but I can't think of a
bigger win.
Yeah, I can't either. And then the win against Oklahoma, that was a top 15 ranked team that had been in the top 5 just a week before, and that was a dominant performance across the board.
Yeah, going, like, I think we're kind of underrating how big that win over Oklahoma was. You know, going on the road and beating a top 15 team, you know, the week after you got this huge win over the number 2 team in the country, you know, it's, that win over Oklahoma was really impressive. You know, like you mentioned, because it was so dominant, it was almost like easy for them. They fell behind early. It was 11-2 within the first few minutes of the first quarter, but after that, LSU really just coasted. You know, it's just like, okay, they're winning this game. So it's, yeah, it struck me how easy that win looked for them. It obviously wasn't easy to beat them, but they made it look easy, and I think that shows that they're back and they're fully back on track and playing the kind of basketball that we thought they could play when we were watching them in November and December.
Is Jada Richard going to become the next big star on this women's basketball team?
I think she's a fan favorite already. I think what helps the fact is that she's from Louisiana. She's from Opelousas, grew up in the Lafayette area, and I think, you know, fans really like her game, the way she plays. They like how she, you know, she's kind of on the smaller end in terms of players, but she doesn't let that get in the way of affecting the game. She's a really good defender. She passes the ball well, and she's shooting really well. And I think she's finally giving LSU that production and ease from point guard that it's really trying to find the past 2 years. It looks like they've got Jada Richard. She's playing really well.
Yeah, and just to add off of that, Reed, I mean, we kind of talked about this just, you know, before. It seems like Mulkey always needs that kind of shorter point guard to facilitate her offense, to lead, you know, that, you know, she's always been post player heavy, right? Developing the post, but she's always had to have a reliable point guard, and Jada Richard seems to be coming into that.
Yeah, it's very important for Kim Mulkey team to have not only a good point guard, I think, but, you know, the right point guard. And Jada certainly looks like that. You know, the reason why they've had some trouble the past couple years to find that right point guard is because it really, that position in the Kim Mulkey system really requires a very specific set of skills, I would say. You have to be able to defend the point of attack. You have to know how to play with pace. You have to know when to speed up, when to slow down. You have to keep the ball moving in half court sets. And you really have to be able to hit some pull-up mid-range jumpers within the structure of the offense, especially in the half court. And so, you know, some of the point guards that have come through in the past couple of years, we're thinking about Haley Van Lith, Cheyenne Day Wilson, you know, they had maybe one or two of those skills, but not all of them. And Jada Richard, you know, is what she's shown through, you know, not only in these first five games, but through the whole season. Like, she's really developed pretty much all of those skills. I think that's why she's had the success she's had, and LSU has put her in the right positions to be this new player, this, you know, this developed player, this player who looks like she's taken a really big step forward in her sophomore year, and that's big. That's a really good news for LSU.
And the schedule lightens up. Texas A&M has only one league win. Florida's got only one league win. Arkansas is, they haven't won a game in the league play. So they're basically playing the next three games against three of the worst teams in the league. So they can really stack some victories here together.
Yep, and then there's South Carolina and then Texas looming in February. It's they're going to have opportunities to keep building confidence, keep stacking wins, and maybe they can beat one of those teams again. You know, we'll see how it goes.
All right, thanks, Reed. We appreciate your time.
Yep, thank you all.
More of Tiger Rag Radio from the Super Chevy Dealer Studio when we come back.
Let's go.
We now return to Tiger Rag Radio, live from Super Chevy Dealer Studio.
All right, back here on Tiger Rag Radio. Just wanted to get to one other thing that Lane Kiffin had to say today when he spoke and at the Baton Rouge Business Report's Power Breakfast event that they had, where Congresswoman Julia Letlow also announced she was running for U.S. Senate. I mean, you literally had like two of the biggest news events.
Trump already told us that.
Well, the fact that she officially announced, because we were thinking it was actually going to happen during D.C. Mardi Gras. And then the fact that, well, one, nobody knew she was speaking unless you were actually going to that event. Like, none of the, you know, you would think when a politician announces her biggest decision of her life, they would tell the press, but that didn't happen. I don't understand that, but hey, that's.
What did Senator Cassidy have to say about it?
He says, bring it on.
Okay.
Bring it on. My record's better than hers. That's and any of the other challengers. But that's not what we're here to talk about. We're here to talk about Whit Weeks, and that's what Lane Kiffin spoke about today at the Baton Rouge Business Report Power Breakfast. Of course, one of the big things that Lane did was retain some of the top players from the 2025 team, Caden Durham, Harlan Berry, Tre'Dez Green, and Whit Weeks. And he said that Whit Weeks was a priority. And he had said that also during the TV broadcast during the Texas Bowl, that it was a priority to bring Whit Weeks back.
Seven people watched.
Yes. But and this was something that Whit Weeks really wanted to come back to. And here's what Lane had to say about that today.
A big part of why he came back was he didn't want to leave LSU football where it was at. He's like, I came here to a place where everybody was scared to play LSU. That's not the case right now. And when it goes, I want to come back and get the physical football back to LSU and leave it the way that I came here, how it was when I came here.
You know, I would imagine Whit Weeks is going to make a pretty penny in 2026. I'm sure he's got a really good NIL deal. He's a sellable person, right? Fan favorite. Everybody loves him. He's kind of a goofball in a way. But there is, we were talking about this in the first hour, one of the things that one of the big differences between Kiffin and Kelly is the authenticity. And the same goes with Whit Weeks. Well, he might be making, he'll probably be one of the top five NIL wage earners on the LSU football team. But football means something to him. LSU means something to him. Winning at LSU means a lot to him. The money's part of it, but those are also big things. So when Lane talks about how Whit Weeks wanted to come back and get this LSU defense and this LSU football program back where it needs to be, I believe it.
The thing that stands out to me most about that is what he focused on, and that is the physicality.
Yeah.
This program, this football team, has not been able to run the football. They haven't been able to block, and they haven't been able to tackle. They haven't been physical, for the most part, for the last 4 years. And to be able to want to come back in order to reestablish that identity that this program has had for the past 100 years or so, for the most part, is commendable, and it's real. They really do need to do that. They really need to be a physical. Look, last night, you know, both Indiana and Miami.
That was a physical football game.
LSU this year would have got wiped off the field.
Yeah.
From both of those teams just because they were not physical enough.
I was literally saying that last night, Todd. I was like, just imagine that Miami defensive line against that LSU offensive line. I kept saying that to the people I was watching the game with. I was like, Garrett Nussmeier would be carried out on an ambulance.
All Mendoza had was a bruised up arm. Imagine what Garrett Nussmeier would have been like after that game.
It would have been horrible. It would have just been horrible. But it's not going to be that way moving forward. And they may not win a national championship next year, but I guarantee you they're going to be tough.
Yeah.
You know, maybe Kim Mulkey needs to go work. She certainly did a job with their women's basketball
team. Yeah, she did. She did. She certainly has turned things around there. So so we're thinking Seton, right? And then any other additions?
Luke?
Prince Will from Ole Miss. That's another one to watch out for. I'm not even going to try and pronounce his last name right now. I'm not going to do that to him. Exactly.
Right.
Number one edge rusher in the portal. I mean, that would be a great get for Lane Kiffin, especially after you lose Patrick Payton and Jack Pyburn. He would be an immediate starter. I mean, he had 9 sacks this year, which is pretty incredible, and then 13 tackles for loss. Right now I think there's a little unknown because Ole Miss was holding his papers, kind of what Washington was doing with Damon Williams Jr. But I think, I've been reading a little bit online, and I think they really have to allow him to transfer at some point, kind of because Duke tried to do the same thing with Mensah, but that didn't end up going well.
Well, with Mensah, they actually went to court today, and the judge refused to put a restraining order on allowed Duke to put a restraining order on Mensah. My understanding with the Prince here,
Will,
yeah,
Umani Manil,
yeah, I'm not going to try to say that again, but is that he's wanted to come to LSU. He did sign with Ole Miss a couple of weeks ago, and there's some kind of buyout that is being negotiated right now. That's what the word is. I think we're going to know all these in the next day or so.
Yeah. All right. Put a wrap on this thing. We'll put a wrap on this show when we come back again. If you missed some segments here, we had a really good discussion with Jake Brown, LSU right fielder, Malachi Thomas, one of the new tight ends out of the transfer portal. You really want to hear that interview if you love LSU. Man, that guy, he's drinking the purple and gold Kool-Aid 24/7. But that was a lot of fun. So, if you missed any of that, you can check us out anywhere you get your podcast. The show is in podcast form there or on YouTube, or check it out at tigerrag.com. We got our past shows up there as well. We'll be back to wrap up the show from the Super Chevy Dealer Studio when we come back.
Chevy trucks have you covered when the road takes you from smooth sailing to Chevy Colorado will eat up some of the toughest terrains with 5 available drive modes. And Silverado and Silverado HD have the muscle to take you out for some serious
With multiple engine options and impressive towing, while Silverado EV is the perfect combo of performance and capability,
nice.
Making it a snap to hitch up this electric truck and hit the road. Wherever the road leads, Chevy trucks are right there with you. See your Super Chevy dealers today.
I'm Richard Fontenot, president of the Louisiana Farm Bureau Federation. For more than 100 years, Louisiana Farm Bureau has been the voice of Louisiana agriculture. Louisiana Farm Bureau advocates on behalf of all the farmers and ranchers across our great state. What that really means is we advocate for you to ensure we have the safest, most abundant, and affordable food supply in the world. Louisiana Farm Bureau is 145,000 members strong, and we want you to join the Louisiana Farm Bureau family.
Visit lafarmbureau.org, the Louisiana Farm Bureau Federation, the voice of Louisiana agriculture.
Now more Tiger Rag Radio, live from Super Chevy Dealer Studio.
All right, we wrap up the show. We'll talk a little men's hoops here. They're losing by, as we're doing the show, I got to make sure I'm hitting live here. I guess they're down by 20 to Florida. It was a nice win against Missouri, and I've been watching this game out of the corner of my eye as we do the show. I mean, Florida, they're the defending national champs. They're 4-1 in league play. They've kind of bullied LSU around today, pushed them around. They've been able to do pretty much whatever they want. You see the talent discrepancy just jumping off the screen, and I'm not like focusing so much in this game. And now they got to go to Arkansas. So this thing,
this is the toughest part of their schedule.
It could get really 1-6 is going to be a tough hill to climb out of, or tough hole to climb out of.
And that's what's been so disappointing and so disheartening about these early losses, because they very realistically had to tell. This is the first game they've gotten pushed around and bullied, okay, like they were most of last year. They could have been 4-3-2, 4-1 heading into this game.
They could have beaten Kentucky, could have beaten A&M.
Should have beaten South Carolina.
Well, I don't know.
With
DJ.
Yeah, if they would have had DJ.
Yeah.
And if they wouldn't have fallen behind by 25 points, but
if they did fall behind, I understand what you're saying.
And if that wasn't a product of them getting pushed around and bullied, that was just a part of them not being able to guard. I mean, what did South Carolina hit? 11 three-pointers in the first half or something like that. So it is. It's disappointing. DJ came back today. I don't know how many minutes he played. Probably didn't have much of a contribution.
Yeah, it's not much of a.
But it's going to take him some time to get back into it. I don't know. I don't know how they're going to do it. But they're not. I've watched the SEC. I've seen every team in the SEC play this year, and I'm not that impressed with the SEC right now.
Mm-hmm. I mean, Florida's look good tonight. They're getting Florida's best punch in this game.
And
Florida had a nice win against Vanderbilt.
Yeah, yeah.
They're getting into midseason form here, and they're showing it off against LSU. So
LSU always brings out the best in everybody.
It seems that way. Mm-hmm. But I'm thinking at most. I know you're watched it a heck of a lot more than I have, Todd. But I'm thinking 5-13, 6-12.
6-12 might. Do it.
No.
6-12. No, you're know, you're right. It would have to probably be something like 8-10.
Can't get
8-10 might do it. As of going into this game, they were on the bubble.
My goodness. How big is that bubble? Or how soft is that bubble? Or whatever the term is. They haven't looked like.
But I think they were still one of the first three out or something like that.
I don't know.
Whatever. It doesn't matter. They're going to need to win some games.
and it could get – what might happen Saturday night is they get snowed out with this winter storm coming.
That would be best case scenario for
them,
honestly.
You go. Yeah. Well, push that game away. Try to get some confidence going, get DJ going, and who knows. All right, that does it for the show. Glenn's been really quiet here lately.
I don't even see him.
He'll have a post-game recap of this thriller in Gainesville, so check that out at TigerRag.com. Andre and Todd always have stuff up there as well, especially with the transfer portal. Jordan Seaton news, you'll catch it here at TigerRag.com. So for Andre, Todd, I'm Jeff. For the latest in LSU sports, check out TigerRag.com. And, of course, Check out the Tiger Rag podcast wherever you get your podcasts. This has been Tiger Rag Radio from the Super Chevy Dealer Studio.
Tiger Rag is everywhere. Online at TigerRag.com. Like us on Facebook at Facebook.com/TigerRag Magazine. Or follow us on Twitter at Tiger_Rag.